The state of Maine's infrastructure. A quadrennial report says Maine is doing better in some areas, but worse in others. Infrastructure doesn't usually make for catchy headlines. Not usually. But then there are times when something terrifying happens. Maybe a bridge collapses, or as happened last week in California, a major dam is breached. There's also, of course, the ongoing Flint water crisis. These events underline what civil engineers have been saying for years, that infrastructure is the backbone of our economy and that we have to take good care of it. Roads and trains carry people and goods to their jobs and to market. We need clean water and waste systems to prevent health problems. Electricity powers our homes and factories. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn about the state of Maine's infrastructure and what's being done or not done to improve it. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Late last year, the Maine section of the American Society of Civil Engineers released its report card on Maine's infrastructure. The report covers critical infrastructure systems, including airports, bridges, dams, railroads, and more. Today, we're going to learn what Maine's grade is, how the grades were determined, and what needs to be done to address critical needs. In the studio with me, Lynn Farrington, who is president of the Maine section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. She is a transportation engineer with Lewis Berger. Andrew McLean is a Democrat from Gorham and is serving his third term in the Maine House of Representatives. He serves as House Chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Transportation. And Dana Humphrey is Dean of the College of Engineering at UMaine. His research in using tire chips as lightweight fill, retaining wall backfill, and thermal insulation has received national attention. As always, we want to hear from you. What do you think are Maine's high-priority infrastructure needs? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I'm sure everybody in Maine has an opinion about this subject, but we're going to start with the broad picture. Lynn, tell me about the philosophy behind this report card. It's issued every 4 years. Is it meant to be a wake-up call?
That's certainly part of the plan for it. We also don't want to cause panic or, you know, false alarm. And by any means, our grading system is similar to the national one, and it's a little deceiving. If you got a D in school, it was very bad. But a D here means we need to give it some attention. A C is actually mediocre. Maybe we're doing not so bad, and there are just a few areas that we need to highlight to improve.
So broadly, Maine received a C-, which, as you said, sounds pretty bad, but it's better than the nation as a whole.
Absolutely. The nation received a D-plus grade, although we are lagging behind New Hampshire and Vermont, which both received a C grade.
Okay. And so the worst grade, D- for roads, C+ for airports and water, because there are categories here. We'll talk about specific categories in just a minute. But first, I want to bring in our other guests. Andrew, how much is it going to cost to bring Maine up to an A or a B in all areas of the infrastructure report card?
That's a really good question. Several years ago in the legislature, the Transportation Committee developed some statutory goals that put forward some measures so the DOT and transportation professionals would be able to measure and quantify the amount that we need. And every year we need about $150 to $160 million just to keep up with basic maintenance. That doesn't include any sort of transformational project or any large, perhaps an emergency that comes up within the transportation system. So roughly about $150 to $160 million just to keep up with basic maintenance every single year.
So is that to maintain our C- score?
That's to maintain that C score.
Oh, boy. Yep. So, Dana, how much of the solution is money, and how much is coming up with new, perhaps less expensive technology?
I think the core is funding. You have to have a base level of funding to maintain our infrastructure. And certainly new technologies can make our infrastructure more durable and in some cases for less cost. But I think that the crux of the problem really is having a good base of funding.
So some of the projects that have been developed at UMaine, and I'm thinking about the bridge in a backpack project, things like that, really not the dent that we might hope that they would?
They absolutely help take and improve our infrastructure. But I think we really go back to there needs to be a base, stable level of long-term funding to be able to take and bring our infrastructure to where it needs to be.
So I'll ask you, and I'll ask you, Lynn, the same question I asked Andrew, to make Maine's infrastructure better, to bring it above a C-minus. How much money are we talking about?
So I would say I don't have my finger on the pulse of the money, but it's significantly more than we're paying right now. And I would add, when we think about infrastructure, I think about the education infrastructure to actually educate the engineers and other professionals who are critical to maintain our infrastructure. That's another area where we need significant investment.
Okay. And what about you, Lynn? What do you believe is needed?
So specifically in Maine, I'll defer to Andrew, but on a national level, we've estimated that it would take $1.6 trillion to bring our infrastructure just to where it needs to be. That being said, I don't know that it's necessarily reasonable to invest enough money to get us all to that A grade. But as things are deteriorating, if we could upgrade them and make them more resilient and make them more sustainable, that's the time to invest.
President Trump has said that he's looking for shovel-ready infrastructure projects. Just last week, news emerged that Maine has requested federal funding for three such projects, $250 million for bridge improvements on interstate highways, $135 million for a barge tug service connecting Maine to other ports, $75 million for railroad bridge improvements. Let me ask you, Andrew, are these the right priorities?
I think those are very important projects, but they're certainly not the only ones. There are hundreds of projects that are waiting in the wings to be done in Maine. I was very excited to hear that President Trump is talking about infrastructure. I think there are a lot of folks, politicians up and down state government, federal government, who give a lot of lip service to say, you know, we need to be investing in our transportation infrastructure. But few people actually introduce bills or introduce legislation to actually fix our infrastructure. Now, I think the question is, how does he pay for it? A lot of folks in Congress are talking about some sort of public-private partnership, financing of those projects. I don't think that's the way to go. I think we need to pay as we go. We need a sustainable and predictable funding mechanism for years to come, because the companies and the states who are putting together these plans to fix our infrastructure need to know years in advance what's going to get fixed. When a project gets put on the conveyor belt to be completed, it doesn't happen within a 6 months or 12-month time frame. These are years in the making. These projects are years in the planning process. And so it's important to have that predictable and sustainable funding mechanism that we can count on for years in the future.
Dean Humphrey, you said that you would like to see education as part of the infrastructure. And I think you're not talking about crumbling school buildings, but rather investment in young people to major in these kind of careers. Do we not have enough engineers coming out of UMaine, at such a terrific reputation of UMaine's engineering school?
Even though that we've grown 70% in our enrollment since 2001, we are not producing enough engineers. And over the next decade, I predict we'll be producing half the number of engineers that we need for all the different needs and industries that require engineers.
Do you believe infrastructure projects, basic infrastructure projects, will be held up for a simple lack of engineering know-how?
We can approach that point where we don't have the engineers to do the designs and monitor construction. And it's particularly important as the baby boom generation engineers retire.
All right. Well, we hear this in so many careers. We've done programs on the shortage of nurses and doctors and teachers, and now adding to that, engineers. Discouraging. Lynn, big news over the past couple weeks out of California, where a dam holding back a major water reservoir was breached. People evacuated that lived beneath that dam. Could something like that happen here in Maine?
I would hope not. But I will say dams are one of the more concerning grades on our list. It earned a D plus. And the biggest, scariest part of this is we only have one inspector for over 1,000 dams in Maine. So this one person drives from Augusta all over the state and probably spends more time driving than he does actually being able to inspect and report on these bridges these dams. And possibly even more concerning than the dams are our levees. On their own, they would have received a grade of D minus. There are only 5 levees in the state, but they were built years ago by the Army Corps of Engineers, and now it's on the towns to take care of them.
Let me stop you there. I didn't even know there were levees in Maine. Where are those levees?
All 5 are in northern Maine. I believe 2 are on the Canadian border.
Okay. And all 5 are in danger.
They are graded between unacceptable and minimally acceptable, all 5.
Andrew, let me ask you about this. Every couple of years, we vote on infrastructure bond projects. Mm-hmm. The bonds, they almost always pass. What is that money being spent on? What's happening right now?
It's another very good question. So as most folks know, every year for the last 5 or 6 years, we've voted on a transportation bond, and they've ranged from $50 million to $100 million. And the reason why we're having to vote on those bonds every year is because we're not paying as we go. Our highway fund in Maine simply does not have enough money to keep up with the basic maintenance. Even with a $100 million bond every year, we still have a lot of deferred maintenance, somewhere in the order of $50 to $60 million in deferred maintenance every single year that we're accumulating. And so those bonds are going to fix roads and fix bridges and invest in our port infrastructure, but it's still not making up the difference.
I've read that Maine has more roads per capita than any other state. Is that true? And is that part of the issue, that each of us is just spending more money than people in other states?
Well, it is. I don't know about that statistic exactly, but we do have a very large state. We have 3 times the number of road miles that New Hampshire does, and we have just about the same number of people. So when you think about the economies of scale that exist, we have a significantly more difficult time coming up with the funding that we need to keep up with basic road maintenance. And it's not just the construction of our roads and bridges and infrastructure, but it's also, you know, the snow plowing and the maintenance that happens in the spring. All that stuff, all those activities, the maintenance comes out of the highway fund. So, you know, when you compare southern states who don't have the snow removal and all the problems that come with winter weather, the freeze and thaw aspects of the seasons, it costs a lot more for northern states, and in particular Maine, which is a big state, to keep up with all that.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Lynn, I was in Virginia Beach, Virginia, a couple of years ago in the summer, and I was surprised that the highways were in really poor shape compared to Maine. Even though they don't have the same snow removal issues, there's a larger population. I'm assuming they take in more tax money. And what struck me is that these issues are not Maine's issues alone.
Absolutely. As we can see from the national grade of the D+, this is something we're struggling with as a nation. We had the boom where we built all of the interstates, but we aren't really prepared to take care of everything and keep it up to the par it needs to be at.
Are there any efforts around the state to say we can't afford this? We've built too much and we need to scale back and close some roads.
There are some roads that are turning into gravel, and they happen to be in more rural areas. And that's a reality if we don't come up with the funding proposals. You know, a couple years ago when the United States Congress was debating a highway fund bill, I remember Senator Angus King on the floor saying, you know, the greatest generation built the interstate system, and we can't even maintain it. We have done tremendous things in our country. We've built the Hoover Dam. We built the Transcontinental Railroad. We built the interstate system. For sure, we can take care of this system that the greatest generation built. We have amazing wealth in this country. There is no reason why we can't take care of our basic infrastructure. There are a few things that people count on government to do. One of those things is to make sure that we have good roads and bridges, and we should be doing, at the least, we should be doing those things.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Dana Humphrey, tell me about some of the other innovations that apply to infrastructure that have been invented or perfected or improved upon at the University of Maine in the engineering school.
Yeah, it's taking and using things like composites in the right way. We're not talking just about bridges and a backpack, because composites are less affected by our severe weather, the salt on our roads. So to take and rehab a bridge by using composites in the right way, and also my colleague Bill Davids, he goes out and rates existing bridges, actually put loaded dump trucks on them and determine, okay, is this bridge really safe or not? And, of course, if it's not, we need to spend money soon. If it is safe, well, maybe that's an investment we can postpone. So there's a lot of things that UMaine does for Maine's infrastructure.
Sure. Is it possible that someday we'll have a pothole-proof pavement system?
I'm not sure if we'll have a pothole-proof pavement system, but someday we'll have an automated system that fixes potholes.
Really?
Yes.
Well, how do you envision that? Is this a self-driving vehicle or something different?
Right now I want a driver at the vehicle, but I think it will have the ability to take and fix potholes without a Maine DOT worker standing out behind the truck.
Okay. And I alluded earlier to the Bridge in a Backpack program. How about for the listeners who maybe don't know about that, if you could explain what that is and what's going on at UMaine?
Yes. This is a fiber tube that's created into the shape of an arch. It's infused with resin. You get an arch that's light enough that two people can pick it up, put it across a stream, put several of these next to each other, put a covering on it, and poof, you got a bridge. And one of the advantages is that it's durable and you can build it faster. So the inconvenience and actually loss or impact on Maine's economy by having the road out of service while the bridge is being replaced is lessened.
Oh, so it's not a permanent solution.
Oh.
It's a way to...
It is a permanent solution.
Because the flexible tube, that's the archway, yeah, is then filled with concrete,
it's
correct?
It's filled with concrete, yes. And then you put panels over the arches, then put soil, pave over it. And one of the goals when you're rebuilding a bridge is get the work done, get the road back in service as quickly as you can. And the Bridge in a Backpack allows that to happen.
Okay. Anything on the horizon that we're going to be reporting on soon?
There certainly will be things on the horizon, but I'll be silent on that for the moment.
Oh, come on. You're not going to tell us about any of them? Lynn, let's talk about some specific categories. We did say that roads got the worst score. Some other areas, the highlight was that our water systems are pretty good. We're not having a Flint water crisis here in Maine.
We do not expect a water crisis in Maine. The problem with our water is the distribution system. Some of it for our municipal drinking water was built back around the Civil War. So we need to at least replace those sections and really get on a better plan. But it's not a particularly organized approach because every town is responsible for their own system.
Okay. What other highlights or lowlights do you think are most important for people to know about?
Municipal wastewater is definitely a good one. There's been a lot of talk about combined sewer overflow since the report card came out. And basically what happens if there's a very large storm, all of that stormwater is going through our wastewater treatment plants, and it doesn't allow for the actual wastewater to go through the wastewater treatment plant. And there is some overflow into our oceans and rivers. A lot of towns are starting to be able to separate our system so that the stormwater goes straight into the ocean without being treated. Brewer is a great example of a town that has won some awards and has done a really great job of doing that.
All right. Well, we are going to go to a break. We'd love to hear from you. What are your questions from this panel of experts on Maine's infrastructure? The phone number 1-800-399-3566, our email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Maine Association of Nonprofits, uniting and strengthening the nonprofit sector through management training and advocacy. Nonprofitmaine.org.
Tomorrow night, President Donald Trump will address a joint session of Congress to lay out his agenda for the coming year. NPR will be there live, carrying his speech and with in-depth analysis and reaction to the address, including the Democrats' response to the president's speech. I'm Audie Cornish. Join us for complete coverage from NPR News.
That's tomorrow evening at 9 o'clock on Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television. Would you like to listen to classical music? Maine Public Classical is now heard on 5 FM frequencies around Maine, in Portland at 104.1, in Bangor at 106.1, Waterville at 99.7, Freiburg-Bridgeton at 91.5, and in the Millbridge MDI area at 93.7 FM. You can also stream Maine Public Classical online in stereo at mainepublic.org, And wherever you hear this Maine Public Radio station, statewide, our HD2 signal carries our classical network that you can hear with an HD receiver. Maine Public Classical. How to find and listen to it. You'll find all the information online at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, an update on Maine's infrastructure. In the studio with me, Dana Humphrey. He is Dean of Engineering at UMaine. Lynn Farrington is president of the Maine section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Representative Andrew McLean serves as the House Chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Transportation. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Charles, who's calling from Rockland. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi there. I just have a simple question. Why not build a road infrastructure in Maine that lasts for 25 to 30 years instead of one that has to be fixed every 3 to 5 years?
Dean?
So a lot of what we see in Maine right now is short-term maintenance strategies. So when you say fixed, that means they need to go back out with the paver in 3 to 5 years and pave again. I live in a rural area. That's the basic nature of things where I live. And do we have the ability to build a road that lasts 25 years without major maintenance? Certainly. But we need to completely rebuild what's there. And one of our big challenges in Maine is frost in the road. You have to have the road built properly to be able to be durable in our winter environment.
Is part of the issue to rebuild a road to that level mean taking out the road for a long time to dig deeply enough and to, you know, get everything part of the structure in place to make it last that long?
Well, I'd say it's definitely out with the bad, in with the good. You don't necessarily take the whole road out of service because you'll move traffic over to one side, rebuild the side, then shift it back over to the other side. Certainly inconvenient for the public, but it is possible to take and build roads that are durable for the long term.
And is it happening in some parts of Maine?
Occasionally it does.
It's called reconstruction, and it's just a more expensive part of investments in our infrastructure. So there are some what the DOT calls skinny mix. It's a very small amount of pavement that they put on top of a road for 3 or 5 years. But when you dig up a whole road, that's called reconstruction, and it's much more expensive than just a small amount of pavement on a road.
Over a 25 or 30-year period, is it still more expensive to have reconstructed a road than to continually repave it?
Well, that's the argument, right? Short-term investments versus long-term investments. I believe that making long-term strategic investments are less costly in the long run and produce better quality product. But when we're not willing to spend the money up front, we have to go with short-term fixes.
But you're a legislator. I mean, there are a lot of competing interests for money. I mean, there are real needs out there in Maine. And, you know, you're looking at things like kids who don't have enough food to eat and the opioid crisis. And how do we balance infrastructure needs with these other really serious problems?
It's a great question. So the Highway Fund is a separate entity. And, you know, for the viewers out there, I just want to make sure that folks understand that the Highway Fund is funded through a variety of means. So fuel tax, your vehicle registration fees, license fees, and a number of other different sources. That makes up the bulk of the money that goes into our highway system. The rest of the money, sales tax, income tax, that goes into the general fund and is used for other items, for other government services. So we are able to fund our highway system through the use of transportation taxes or fees. And so there's not really necessarily a competition between other services that the government has to provide and transportation. We have the ability through our highway fund and transportation taxes to raise the revenue that we need.
And is there still the revenue that we need, even though I know that a big part of the funding comes from fuel taxes, even though cars are becoming more fuel efficient and using less gas?
That's correct. So many people wonder why we need more money. Well, the fuel tax, you know, seems like it's been raised, you know, every other year. The federal fuel tax is 18 cents. It hasn't been raised since 1993. Everyone knows what 18 cents got us in 1993, and everyone knows what it won't get us today. So there has been a significant drop off in the purchasing power of the penny or 18 cents. And we're also seeing a declining amount of money that we're getting through the fuel taxes because cars are becoming more fuel efficient. So we are seeing less and less money come into the highway fund in general. This is happening in Maine. It's happening in every single state around the country. So we've got to figure out a way to address the declining amount of revenue that we're seeing. That's why we're seeing this problem with the funding, seeing that gap.
We have a question from Erin on Facebook. She writes, roads like 295 seem dangerously congested at times. What can be done to address capacity issues on major corridors? Is public transportation the best solution, or is roadway expansion needed in certain areas? Do any of the three of you have an opinion on what's the best solution there?
Public transportation is very difficult in Maine because we are such a rural state. Even if the bus routes are provided, we're very car reliant. So it would be very, I think, difficult to put a passenger transportation plan in place that would alleviate that congestion. I'm not sure of the DOT's plans to add capacity. It's certainly something that an argument could be made that it is needed.
All right, we'll go to Marion, who's calling from Lisbon. Hi, Marion, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering, I know that in 2009-2010, President Obama took a lot of criticism for the stimulus package that was, that he put forth for infrastructure. Does this mean that there's no federal funding coming our way since that stimulus package is what out of money or it was not continued? I was just wondering if, interstate commerce, a lot of companies have goods and services going from state to state. It seems to me that there is a federal component to this as well. I was just wondering how much money is coming into the state from the federal government.
Marion, we also have a similar question from an email from Paul. He writes, today's lead New York Times editorial seems to indicate nothing will be done on the federal level until at least next year. And he follows that up by saying, doesn't the majority of funding for state work come from federal funding? Is the majority, Andrew, from federal funding?
We receive hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funds over the course of a two-year cycle. So the fuel tax on the federal level, all that money does go back to the states to fund infrastructure projects. The ARRA funding was, a one-year, two-year, three-year deal. So that really helped for those couple years. But again, as I mentioned earlier, we need sustainable and predictable funding every single year, because the infrastructure needs are so significant, and it does cost to build a road. It costs a significant amount of money to fix a dam or fix a bridge, whatever the infrastructure project is. So it's not one or two years that we can increase the amount of money coming in that's going to solve the problem. We need that sustainable and predictable funding every single year.
Marion, thanks for your question. We're going to go to Beth, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Beth. Go ahead.
Yeah, in the beginning of your program, you had mentioned that a lot of people are reverting now back to dirt roads, and I am assuming because they can no longer afford the upkeep to keep them paved. And my question has always been in the back of my mind, living on dirt roads as well as paved roads for my life right now, on one that had been a dirt road that's now paved, the traffic is, twice as fast. People can't walk on the road anymore. And it's a peninsula. And this is a back road. And there's so many back roads with very few homes. Why not keep them dirt roads? Would it be less expensive, or is it more expensive to the upkeep of a dirt road versus the paved?
Dean Humphrey, do you know the answer? Is a dirt road indeed less expensive than a paved road to maintain?
So for low-volume rural roads, and I live on one, oftentimes having a good gravel road is a viable alternative. And an advantage of gravel versus pavement is if it gets bumpy on a gravel road, you can come out and regrade it. Whereas once you start the pavement on a rural road really starts to fail, it's hard to fix without grinding up the pavement.
How low volume does it need to be? How do you qualify that idea?
I can't put an actual number on low volume, but I'll say my low volume road I live on, the town is schizophrenic. They can't decide whether it's paved or unpaved, and they'll pave it, and then it'll fail, and they grind it up, and then they'll go back and pave it again eventually. So I don't have an exact number, but we don't want to rule out a good gravel road as a viable way for some of our rural roads in Maine.
Okay, Beth, thanks for your question. Good question. We'll go to Nancy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, yes. If the man in the White House is only going to be there 4 years, and he has pledged money for infrastructure, does the state of Maine have studies and surveys done and plans drawn that we can plug into that money as it becomes available?
The short answer is always. There's always a backup list of projects.
Yes, I don't know. Did you hear at the beginning, Nancy, we talked about three projects that the state of Maine has already requested that the federal government fund, and specifically President Trump, bridge improvements, a barge tug service, and railroad bridge improvements.
Well, yes, but we normally would get money for some things, but just because we request money for it, it doesn't mean the studies, the surveys, and the plans are drawn.
Sure. So are those things that I mentioned, are the studies and surveys ready? Are these shovel ready, as they say?
Oh, I think they would be. And those aren't the only projects that we would be looking to do over the next few years if there was an infusion of money. Just because the projects aren't getting done because there's not funding doesn't mean we don't know what needs to be done. This, you know, the state of Maine and the DOT has a long list of projects that if we were to receive additional funding, it would go directly to those projects.
Nancy, thanks for your call. We're going to go here to an email. This is from Daniel. As far as I've ever been able to determine, the ASCE rankings do not address pipelines, such as oil and gas pipelines. If not, why not? There seem to be more and more pipeline leaks and breaks, but the issue of pipeline age, maintenance, repair, and replacement seems never to be talked about. Do you know the answer, Lynn?
I know it's been discussed in the past, and it's possible that we will add it. We use the same rankings or similar rankings to the National Infrastructure Report Card, so we will kind of follow their lead on that one.
Okay. And let me go back a little bit. How long has the Society been creating this report card?
This is our third report card, and we do it in 4-year cycles. So we are essentially looking back at 12 years of data. And we haven't seen much change. It's very discouraging.
Okay. And nationally, they've been doing it for 12 years as well?
No, nationally, they've been doing it for longer.
But breaking it down by state for 12 years.
Yep.
Okay. We'll go to Mark, who's calling from Carabasset Valley. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. Just a couple of comments. And I have been on, not in Carabasset Valley, but I've been on involved with local government and had to do budgets and road work and all that sort of thing. And I guess there's two frustrations that really kind of point out the lack of political will to get these things done the way they should be. One is that in the state we have a biennial budget, and most of these projects really are much longer term and need much more solid commitment, as the panel has already spoken to. And as you asked, there's also the problem that with funding coming from gas taxes, from vehicle taxes, all of which are in declining mode in terms of numbers, it only means greater increases. So that's just a political dead end, if you will, over time. The second thing is, just today we're hearing on the news that the president is suggesting not that we spend money on infrastructure, but that we have a 10% increase in defense budget, which has to come from reductions in domestic spending. And it just very frustrating to see those kinds of things happening with the need for clean water, clean air, that spurred separation projects those who are the DEP being dismantled. There's just not a political will, and I just like to hear the
okay, Mark, thanks for your call. And Andrew, I would say that this lack of political will doesn't seem to have started with the Trump administration. Why do you think this has not been a priority, or the level of priority that the Association of Civil Engineers would like to see it be for at least 12 years now?
I don't know. I love talking about infrastructure, but not many legislators do. Infrastructure is one of the most critical functions of government. If we don't have good roads, good bridges, good dams, we're in trouble. People can't get to and from places safely. Goods can't get to and from market efficiently. What is government doing if it can't ensure good infrastructure? So it needs to become a big issue on the national stage, but it also needs to be an issue on the local level as well. And over the last 4 to 5 years since I've been serving on the Transportation Committee, we've been having conversations about funding. I had several proposals last year in the last legislative session. I have a couple more this year that we'll be talking about in the coming months. But it needs to become an issue. Eventually, we're going to have to deal with this, and we can push this off, and we can push this off and push this off. But eventually, someone is going to have to grapple with the issue of funding. We've got to pay for it. It's got to come from somewhere, and so we've got to figure out what the solution is.
Dean Humphrey, you're nodding, but you know we can all cite some of the big, spectacular infrastructure problems, the bridge that fell in Minnesota, I believe it was, mm-hmm. another one in Ohio. And yet, these things make headlines. They make national news. Politicians talk about infrastructure when they campaign, but things don't seem to change.
I agree, and I remember that the bridge in Minnesota well. But what I would say is we need to think long term. One of the reasons we have an incredible economy in the United States today is because of our infrastructure. And as we allow that to slowly deteriorate, we're going to see a corresponding decrease in our ability to have a strong economy. And it happens slowly, so you don't notice it. And we as a people need to have the will to take and look long term. And it's easy to blame politicians, but really we as a people need to say that this is important.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for your call. And if you would like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
A pastry chef who President Obama called the Crust Master is now working in a bloodier venue, baking meat pies for audience members at the grisly murder musical Sweeney Todd.
The pies are really delicious. They're flaky. They're light. No fingernails in them or anything.
The White House, this is not. Baking for the Demon Barber of Fleet Street this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with nature photographer Joel Sartore about his photo arc project, making beautiful studio portraits of animals in zoos and rescue centers. Animals like the Bengal slow loris, the white Arctic fox, and the snow mouse.
They're animals that will never have their voices heard before they go away, before they're let off to extinction.
Join us.
And you can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Coming up in just a few minutes right here on Maine Public Radio at 2 o'clock, we'll hear Commonwealth Club of California. Today we'll have a panel discussion on building power and voice to bring about change in our society. That's the Commonwealth Club of California coming up at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Maine's infrastructure needs. With me in the studio, Dana Humphrey, who is Dean of the Engineering School at University of Maine. Andrew McLean is in the Maine House of Representatives, and he serves as the House Chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Transportation. And Lynn Farrington is President of the Maine Section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. She is a transportation engineer with Lewis Berger. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go up to Bangor and Matthew. Hi, Matthew. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer. How are you?
Good.
Thank you. So I've got a theoretical question that's been bothering me for years. I run a small business. I need to fix roofs and pavement and that kind of stuff. and I have to make decisions about how I'm going to pay for it, either paying it out of cash reserves or borrowing money. So my problem with government is that we need things that we have to pay for, and I'm wondering about how priorities are set and whether we bond for infrastructure improvements or whether we raise taxes and do the things that actually need to be done to make our state productive.
Well, he's asking the million-dollar question, isn't he?
That is a million-dollar question. I think it's really important that the folks in Maine know that, in my view, and as much as I'm critical of the DOT sometimes, I think they do tremendous work, and I think that they have their priorities set right, correctly. They are putting in their work plan, their three-year work plan, they put together a list of projects that are the most critical, that are most urgent. And I think that they are setting the correct priorities for the next few years. Does that mean that everything's getting done that should get done? No. But they are doing very good work, and I think that they are doing it efficiently and in a cost-effective manner.
How about the paying for it, though? How do we determine what's going to be bonded, what we ought to just raise taxes for, and what other sources of income?
Well, in order to bond, it needs to be a long-term project. It needs to have a lifespan of roughly 75 years or so. So some of the quote-unquote cash that gets put into the highway fund, that goes for paving, some of the projects that are going to last maybe 10, 20 years. The long-term, the larger projects are the ones that we bond for, like the investments in the marine terminal, the investment we're making in the Sarah Milder Long Bridge that goes from Kittery to Portsmouth. Those are the large projects that we bond for.
Okay. Matthew, thank you for your question. We're going to go to Portland and Joseph. Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Everyone cited figures that are in the tens of millions of dollars. And, you know, it's clearly an awful lot of money, but maybe it's not. And I don't have a sense. It's rather abstract. So I don't have a sense, for instance, I'm driving on 495 or on I-95. How much does it cost for a mile of this road? Or I just drove over the bridge across the Kennebec River. How much does that cost? It'll give me more of a realistic view of what the money amounts, why they are what they are.
Dana Humphrey, do you know the answer? How much does a mile of I-95 cost?
I can't give a cost on a mile of I-95, but a major bridge and is $50 million and up. So when we talk about highway projects, there's a real cost to make it happen. And I'd say the same thing for water supply projects, sewage projects. These are expensive but critical investments for Maine's future.
How come they cost so much? How come a bridge is $50 million?
Okay, so one of the things for existing infrastructure, if you're rebuilding an existing bridge or road, it's kind of like performing open heart surgery on someone while they're playing tennis. You've got to keep the existing flow of traffic going. That adds real money. And plus you have materials, you have highly skilled laborers that take and do the work. And it just costs money.
It all adds up.
It does.
All right. Well, Joseph, thanks for your question. A good question. Let's see here. We'll go to Carol, who's calling from Kakajo. Hi, Carol. How are you? It would help if I linked on your phone. Carol, go ahead.
Okay. I didn't think to write out a simple question. The lady I just talked with got quite an earful of my ideas. But I wasn't even sure there'd be time enough for a question before the program is over. I just would like to know why there isn't a smoother way of getting the funds that are available right into the transportation committee or transportation, where they have the okay to go ahead and authorize hiring contractors to get some of these more desperate situations at least repaired, or...
So you're wondering about the timetable, the timeline.
The timetable, you got it.
Okay, so from how long does it take, Andrew, from the time the money comes in to get it spent on Maine's roads, bridges, airports, etc.?
Well, briefly, if it's a small project, it can go out relatively quickly. But if it's a larger project that has a lot of design needs, it has to go out to bid. I mean, the Sarah Milger Long Bridge was a bridge that took, you know, it was years in the making. But a small paving project can go out in 6 months. So it goes out very quickly, as quick as it can.
All right, Carol, thanks so much for your question. We have an email from Michael. I've read that Trump's plan for infrastructure is not federal investment, but privatizing public infrastructure, including roads, bridges, water, to the highest bidder. Is this your understanding? And Andrew, yes, that's your understanding, right? Yeah, and you oppose that. So I want to move on and ask you, Lynn, we talked earlier about some of the high points and low points in what the society found in this quadrennial report. And this may surprise some people, but one of the places Maine scored pretty well was energy.
Yeah, we're actually doing very well with our electricity production, thanks in part to a $1 billion investment by CMP for a reliability project. And it's also fun to note that we produce the most renewable energy of any state east of the Mississippi. So we're doing well, and I think there's more good things on the horizon that Dana can tell us about.
So our energy needs, we're producing enough energy, and we have more projects planned. You all do not grade cost of the energy that's created.
Correct.
Okay. And you want to talk about some of those projects? Dean Humphrey?
So the University of Maine is working hard on developing Maine's offshore wind capacity. And to this end, we have two units that are full-scale units that we're working toward construction right now. What I tell my students is that you are not going to make it out of this world burning fossil fuels. And it's going to take your generation of engineers to make the change. And we have to be working diligently at the early stage of this now so that you have a form of energy you can use for your entire life.
Where are we in that project, in the offshore wind project? I know that there's been an incredibly innovative water tank to test that project and others on your facility. Is that... maybe tank is not the right word because it's a much bigger project than that. Is that complete? Is that in use now?
We have a wind wave facility at the University of Maine that's complete. We can move the floor up and down to vary the depth of water, and that facility is unique in the world, and it's at the University of Maine, fully operational.
Okay, and how far do you think we are from seeing an offshore wind farm in Maine, a deep water offshore wind farm?
So this would be the first two. You start small, two units. This could be on the order of 3 to 4 years. We have the design at full scale, and we are working toward construction.
All right. And we have a question that I also think you'll be able to answer, Dean Humphrey. Kay writes, many years ago, I heard or read of a system using recycled tires to make a road paving material that moves with the freezing and thawing and lasts for decades, 30 years or so. If this is doable, why hasn't it happened?
Okay. So ground-up tires can be used as an additive in asphalt pavement. And under the right circumstances, it can make pavements last longer. But there are other ways to make longer-lasting pavement. My own work with reusing scrap tires was using it as lightweight fill material. For example, the Portland Jetport Interchange has 1.2 million scrap tires as lightweight fill. That's different than the pavement. And these innovative technologies are things that incrementally help us have more durable and more cost-effective roads, but it's not the only solution. The core is we need a stable level of funding.
I never knew that 1.2 million tires. So the next time you're going to the Portland Jetport by way of the Maine Turnpike, think
yes.
About the fact that you're driving over 1.2 million ground-up tires.
Yes, and there's other projects in Maine that have that many or more tires in them. And it was key to being able to manage our flow of scrap tires. And it was also key to being able to build cost-effective roads.
All right. Well, Andrew, why don't we wrap up by having you tell us about some of the proposals on the horizon here in Maine?
There are some folks in Augusta who are working very hard on these particular issues, the funding issues. I've proposed several different measures that would raise revenue for our transportation infrastructure in our state. Some are a combination. The proposals are a combination of efforts. Some involve taxes. Some involve taking some money from the general fund. And some involve a variety of other mechanisms that it's essentially a hybrid mechanism to raise money. There's no one solution. As I tell people, we do not have Republican roads or Democratic roads or conservative or liberal roads. We have main roads. This is something that everyone can come together on. This is something that everyone agrees needs to be done. The question is how. And I know we can do it. We've done more complicated things in our country and here in our state. So we can find a solution. We have several proposals in front of us. I'm looking forward to working with the Transportation Committee and the legislature as a whole to address this issue over the next 2 years, and we'll see what comes of it.
So looking at this, though, the broader picture and what you have said before and is coming up again and again is changing our thinking about infrastructure and having that long-term planning that you so much want, Andrew. Is this – are you getting buy-in from your fellow legislators, or do their eyes glaze over when you start to talk to them about long-term investment in infrastructure?
Well, I will say it's challenging when we're talking about revenue because we are going to have to pay for this in some way. But let me tell you, every legislator has a bad road in their district. Every legislator has a bad bridge in their district or a bridge that needs to be fixed. So when it comes time for that bridge to be fixed, they want it to be fixed very soon. And so we're all impacted by these. As I said, we drive on main roads and main bridges. We don't have any Republican or Democratic roads or bridges. So everyone's impacted by this. And people recognize the need for a sustainable solution. The question is how to do it.
And Lynn, you say that you want this report to draw attention to this issue, but you definitely don't want to say that the sky is falling.
Absolutely.
You say a C grade is not as bad as it seems.
No, absolutely not. The bridges in Maine are safe. One in seven is structurally deficient, but we're even working on that terminology because it sounds a little scarier than it is. It just means that maybe there's one small component of that bridge that is less than ideal that needs to be fixed.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here today. Lynn Farrington, the president of the Maine section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Andrew McLean represents District 27 in the Maine Legislature and serves as the House Chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Transportation. And Dana Humphrey is the Dean of Engineering at UMaine. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for our Month in Review show. We will discuss the stories that made headlines in February, including the governor's effort to undo the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, the police body camera debate in Portland, and the pressure that Maine senators are facing over Trump cabinet appointees and investigations into alleged Russian hacking. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.